ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय राधा सम्मुखा समशक्तिं सखी संगा निवासिनीं त्वाम् अहम् सततम् वंदे माधवाश्रय विग्रहाम् राधा सन्मुख संशक्तिम् राधा सन्मुख संशक्तिम् सखी संग निवासिनीम् सखी संग निवासिनीम् त्वामहं सततं वंदे त्वामहं सततं वंदे माधवाश्रय विग्रहं माधवाश्रय विग्रहं. Now word for word, this verse is from the Achanapadati in the prayers that are used for worshipping the spiritual master when one does his daily worship. The translation is, O spiritual master, I continually offer my obeisances unto you, who are always in the presence of Srimati Radharani and are very much devoted to her. You always reside in the association of her confidants, the gopis, and you are the abode of loving devotion to Krishna. So, this ISKCON movement is Radharani's movement, Lord Chaitanya's movement, who is Lord Chaitanya. Si Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. Who were Lord Chaitanya's direct disciples, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan are all Manjaris, Radharani's most confidential assistants. And also all down our line of our disciplic succession, all our Acharyas are all Manjaris. Some devotees mistakenly think that Srila Prabhupada is in Sakya Ras, but actually, if we properly understand our disciplic succession, we can understand who Srila Prabhupada is. And this verse very nicely describes how he is the Madhavashraya Vigraham. He's the ashraya of Bhagwan is Radharani. The Krishna, he is the Vishaya. And Radha, she is the ashraya. She is the shelter. So all down our line, we see how Radharani has sent her most confidential assistants to establish her movement. And Srila Prabhupada's guru, when Bhaktivinod in the Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava of Bhaktivikash Maharaj describes how when Bhaktivinod was sent to Jagannath Puri to deal with Bishakhan, then he had a dream where Lord Jagannath told him, I want you to re-establish the pure Vaishnava Siddhanta. And Bhaktivinod begged Lord Jagannath that I'm too old and not strong enough to do this, so you please send someone from your eternal entourage to be able to do this. So Lord Jagannath told Bhaktivinod, okay, go and pray to Bimala Devi. So he did that, and when Bhaktisiddhanta was born, he gave him the name Bimala Prasad. So Bimala is the Lord's Banerjee's name for Jagannath Puri. Every dham has Lord Shiva as the Lokapala, protector of the dham, and when wherever he is, his eternal consort is also there. So when Bhaktisiddhanta got initiated, he was given the name of Sri Bharsha Bhanavi Devi Daitaya, the dearmost to the daughter of Rishabhanu Maharaj, which is another very strong indicator that this is Radharani's movement, that she's sending her Daita, a very dear associate like this. And Srila Prabhupada also, his father was a pure Gaudiya Vaishnav, and he would every day invite sadhus. They lived in Harrison Road, near the Malik, in one of the Malik family's compounds. And Prabhupada, from babyhood, was taken in the pram to the temple by his his nanny, or by his mother, taken into the temple. And every morning, because the Radha Govinda Mandir of the Malik family, be very wealthy family, they would distribute Mahaprasadam of kachoris and halva, cooked in pure ghee. So all the sadhus knew this, and they would daily come and get some Mahaprasadam, such nice, tasty kachoris. And so Srila Prabhupada's father would always invite one of these sadhus to come and have lunch in his home. And what would he ask all the sadhus? He says, please bless my son that he becomes a nice servant of Srimati Radharani. Ja ja Shishi Radha. So Srila Prabhupada, he disappeared from this world in Vrindavan Dham on the 14th of November 1977 at 7:30 p.m. And today it's known as Ananta Chaturthi, the fourth day of Shukla Paksha of Kartik Mas, is the day of Anantadev. And interestingly, it's at the Pradosh, means at dusk. The time Prabhupada left was the time of Anantashesh. And interestingly, today is Mula Nakshatra. The day Srila Prabhupada left was also Mula Nakshatra. So I was very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada permitted me to enter into his daily entourage. What happened was when Gautam Tilak came to Prabhupada came to Mauritius in October 1975. I had actually joined the devotees in Rosebel in July 1975. And after spending about a month and a half with them, I kind of came to the conclusion that, you know, seeing in the Back to Godhead magazines that Prabhupada has so many disciples. And in those days, you know, neophyte, new devotees, they were a little fanatical like that, so I thought, no, this is not for me. And I missed Prabhupada's visit to Mauritius in October. But I was convinced about the whole philosophy and everything. I was chanting the holy name Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day. So then I decided I'll go and try and find a personal guru in the Himalayas. So I took a boat, and in those days there was the same Sindhya shipping line that was making half passenger, half cargo shipping route from Mumbai to Mombasa to to Madagascar, and then to Mauritius, and then to Seychelles, and then back to Mumbai. So the third class ticket was 1400 rupees, quite cheap compared to the air flight. So I took a ticket, and when I came on the boat, there were the ISKCON devotees from Rosebel, plus a few French, because when Prabhupada came, then when he left Mauritius, he liked Mauritius very much, and he instructed Bhagwan, who was GBC of France, to send some French devotees. So he sent Daimriga and Kapila, Prabhus. And so they also were traveling in the third class, cheapest ticket. And we spent a nice time together on the boat. Took about 2 weeks, stopped off a couple of days in Seychelles. And Prabhanu, he took the occasion, because they were quite strapped for cash in those days. So he made me enroll as a patron life member so that I could come and stay for free in the ISKCON guest houses. So then by Lokanath Maharaj's mercy, he convinced me to shave up, join full time. And I thought, let me try this. So then when I had joined as a brahmachari and shaved my long hairs, then the acting president at that time, Giriraj Maharaj, was in the Canary Islands renewing his Indian visa. So Prabhu Vishnu was the acting president, he was vice president. And he convinced me to surrender all my dollars. And then he flew to Mayapur Festival and left me in Bombay washing the toilets in the Brahmachari ashram. But anyway, I had kept some traveler's checks. So then Bijeta, one godbrother, he was in charge of cleaning Prabhupada's quarters. And then he said, you know, you must come and see Prabhupada. He says, you know, he was in charge of the BBT godown, so he couldn't go to Mayapur, but he was going to Vrindavan. He said, come to Vrindavan. So then I took the train with him and we went to Vrindavan. And there I met up again with the Mauritian devotees when they came from the Mayapur part of the festival. And then they, we were all staying together in Fogel Ashram. And then Srila Prabhupada, the day he came, if I remember right, he stopped off, he flew from Mayapur to Delhi, and then he went to Kurukshetra, and then he came down to Vrindavan. And we were in the Fogel Ashram, you know, we didn't really know in those days, and we had drunk the well water, and we all got chronic dysentery. And we were lying, you know, almost dying in our sleeping bags in Fogel Ashram. But then we heard, you know, Prabhupada is coming. So the next morning we had couldn't make it to Mangalati, but I dragged myself to the temple to listen to Prabhupada give the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class. And prior to being a devotee, I had studied with Venkateshwananda Swami, who actually met Prabhupada when he came to Mauritius. He went with some of his disciples, and he was very, very humble and submissive in front of Prabhupada. But anyway, I had been studying Ashtanga Yoga with him for quite some time before I became a devotee. So I was really into this Kundalini Yoga. So when I went into the temple, you know, it was full of devotees, and Prabhupada had just started singing Jaya Radha Madhava. sang with so much love and so much power that I was completely flabbergasted. I realized this is a living saint. You know, the Franco family is my family, big family. My father had 17 brothers and sisters. My father had 22 brothers and sisters. My mother had 17. The old Franco family is very religious. They didn't believe in contraception or the rhythm method. They would conceive, bus, only time they'd have sex. And quite a few of the aunts and uncles like that became priests and nuns. So these old families are quite pious like that. My mother-in-law, still today, every day, first thing she goes to church for the 6 o'clock mass with my wife's father-in-law like that. So anyway, I had always been fascinated by the lives of the saints, and I had studied them somewhat, and when I saw Srila Prabhupada singing with so much love, I realized this is a living saint. And I was totally astounded. I still hadn't the idea to surrender to him. Still had that. You know, I had read the autobiography of a yogi by Paramahamsa. What was his name? Yogananda. And he speaks of this mystic saint in the Himalayas named Babaji. So that was my idea, go into the Himalayas and find Babaji. But then when I realized, wow, Srila Prabhupada is a living saint. And then that's when, so I had put myself into, you know, yoga asana, and I was looking from, not from the eye point of view, but, and I was seeing, during Prabhupada's lecture, he was completely this controlling everything. When Prabhupada would describe the material world and Kali Yuga, the cloud would hide the sun, and the birds would, you know, fly out of the temple. And then when he would speak on Krishna and the spiritual world, then the sun would shine out, and birds would all, and I was even able to observe even the walls in ecstasy like that. And I thought, this is a perfectly self-realized personality. So that evening, Srila Prabhupada gave a darshan in his house in Vrindavan at around 5 in the evening. So I went in, and I was sitting at the back against the wall, but it wasn't too far, just 10 feet away from Srila Prabhupada. And then again I went into asana like this and inside, and then I got a real surprise, because I realized that Srila Prabhupada's my grandmother, like, and it just made me completely melt, and I started crying. And Prabhupada was talking to these Indian, kind of VIP life members in India. And then he noticed me like that, and he also sat back. And then I realized that he's my eternal guru like that. So when Srila Prabhupada was in Mayapur, Gautam Tilak had been invited to Prabhupada to come visit Mayapur, and he went. And then the devotees, because Gautam, he helped the devotees here constantly, very, very significantly. He also gave us our farmland like that. He was a full ISKCON man. And him and Srila Prabhupada immediately became very intimate friends. He arranged for Prabhupada to be brought into the airport by the VIP section, and you know, right up to when he escorted Prabhupada back onto the plane through the VIP section of the airport. He was constantly, he had lent his cars to the devotees, and his friend, what was his name, gave his Mercedes Benz. Anyway, Ramdur, that's right, gave his white Mercedes. And the devotees were using Prabhupada's, Gautam's Toyota to do all the errands and arrangements for Prabhupada's visit. And there was one minister, he was bringing pure cow's milk every morning for Prabhupada. And one life member gave, Lakshman Bhai, he gave his beach cottage in Point Isny for Prabhupada's use. So the devotees, like from real austere conditions in that rose belt shivala, in this posh bungalow right on the seaside. So anyway, when Gautam came to Mayapur, the devotees told him that this Franco boy had joined. And then when he heard my name, Malak, he went and told Prabhupada. He said, if this boy becomes your disciple, because he's from one of the aristocratic founding families in Mauritius, then the Hindus in Mauritius will really take your movement seriously. So after that darshan, the next day, Brahmananda came and told me, Prabhupada wants to see you. He's willing to initiate you. And I had just joined, you know, 1 month. Usually you had to wait at least 6 months before getting recommended for initiation. But because of Mr. Tilak, I got that shortcut. So I went in before Srila Prabhupada and just totally surrendered. And so Srila Prabhupada said, so you will take initiation? And I just said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. So then he said, and then the boys here, because the Mauritian disciples were there with Brahmananda, who was our GBC, he said, they would like you to go back and help preach. So then I submitted. I said, well, I've just joined, and wouldn't it be better that I spend some time in India to learn a bit first, and then I can go back and preach, know what to preach? And Prabhupada said, yes, very good. So then they sent me to Mumbai to join the construction crew to build Radharas Bihari's temple and guest house, because I had, you know, architectural drafting experience. And then in 1976, and Srila Prabhupada came down. He spent a lot of his last year and a half like that in Mumbai, because he was very eager to install Sri Sri Radha Ras Bihari into their new house, to their new temple, before he left. So, you know, Bijeta was also a draftsman in the construction crew, and we became like best friends. And he had the duty, besides working for the construction, being in charge of the BBT godown, because he was big and strong. And he was also in charge with his wife of cleaning Prabhupada's quarters. So he immediately dragged me into that service. And actually, there was one thing I wanted to mention. One day, you know, so every day off from that, during Prabhupada's week or so that he spent in Vrindavan, actually I got initiated together with another Mauritian, because Dr. Subhagra, his good friend was Mr. Narayan of the CUB. So Dr. Subhagra is a disciple of a disciple of Devraha Baba, and he was taking Narayan to get initiation by the same guru. And because Narayan had got Srila Prabhupada's, he became a life member, and he got Srila Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatams. So he read in there that if one wants to make his this human form of life a success, he must take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. So he had an appointment with Dr. Subhagra to take the train from Delhi to go to Varanasi and meet this guru of his. But Mr. Narayan came late, so Subhagra just took a train and left him. So he's there in this train station wondering what he should do, because he doesn't know where in Varanasi he had to go like this. And then up the Mathura train rocks up, and out come the devotees from Vrindavan who were on the way to the airport to receive Srila Prabhupada to bring him down there. So he, you know, greeted them, "I'm your life member from Mauritius. Oh, come meet Prabhupada," like this. So he got dragged to the Delhi temple, and then, you know, there was only a small reception, you know, group there. So when Prabhupada inquired about him, he told Prabhupada, "Well, I'm your life member from Mauritius. I've been reading your Srimad Bhagavatam, and I read in there that if one wants to perfect his life, he must accept initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. So I've come to India for this." And he said, "Will you be willing to be my spiritual master?" And Prabhupada was very pleased, because this was a, you know, intellectual man. He eventually worked up to the number 3 slot in the CUB. So he came down to Vrindavan. Prabhupada told him, "Come to Vrindavan." And on Ram Nomi, was the 4th of April, 1976, we were initiated together, along with about another 50-60 devotees from around the world. Big initiation ceremony. He got the name Apavarga Das. I got the name Arjuna Das. I actually, you know, was quite new, even though I had spent a month with the devotees, but still infected by a lot of the Mayavad teachings I'd imbibed through Venkateshwananda Swami and Yogananda and all these other Mayavad gurus. But anyway, when Srila Prabhupada gave me my beads, I could only recite the three principles. I was thinking, what is the fourth one? And then Prabhupada told me, "No intoxication." And then he handed me my beads, and then I put my left hand. And Prabhupada, "No, right hand." I guess. So anyway, I was very lucky. But when I came down to Bombay, then I got engaged by Bijeta to help him clean Prabhupada's quarters. So we would do that twice a day. In the morning, while Prabhupada was on his morning walk, and then in the evening, after his darshan. And Vijeta, he really trained me up properly. You know, we would go in there just as Prabhupada left with his entourage of senior devotees and sannyasis, disciples. Often Dr. Patel would be there also. And then we would go up and we would have a kirtan. Prabhupada, wherever he would move, there would always be a kirtan. And then when he went off, then Jetan pulled me up to Prabhupada's quarters, which was the third floor of one of these buildings that have since been demolished. And at one side there was a duplex apartment. So one side was Prabhupada's quarters and the other side was the sannyasi ashram, where actually I was staying, because Lokanath Maharaj, you know, I was staying in the life member guest house as a patron life member. And he said, "Why are you staying there alone? You know, come and stay with me." He was very kind to me. So anyway, when Srila Prabhupada left, then we would go into his door and Prabhupada's shoes would be in the entrance on a mat like that. And then Vijayata told me, "The first thing you have to do is beat your mind 100 times. So this is a wonderful opportunity to use the spiritual master's shoes. And and you get the dust of the pure devotee. He was a very enthusiastic devotee. He was a grihasthi. So he would take Prabhupada's shoes and just, and then he'd do it to me, you know. And then we would go in, and in Prabhupada's sitting area, where he'd do his darshans, receive his guests, was also where he would sit and do his Srimad Bhagavatam dictations. Prabhupada would get up very early every morning, and I'll get back to that later, his schedule. So then, you know, we would tidy up and make Prabhupada's bed, clean his bathroom, and then where Prabhupada would translate, often there was some remnants, sometimes a little bit of sandesh. Sometimes it was like orange rinds. I remember the first time it was orange rinds. And Vijayda was ecstatic. Oh, Mahaprasada. And he gave me this orange rind, you know, just the skin. What am I supposed to do with this, you know? And he was already chewing one, you know. This is Mahaprasada. Oh, try to eat this orange rind. But anyway, I got very lucky. Pulled it right into Prabhupada's entourage. And once they gave me Prabhupada's brass buckets and lota, bathing lota, to polish. And I spent like a morning polishing this. But then at 11, they sent it back. And I'd use brasso, you know. And Prabhupada said, rejected, not clean enough. I was surprised. Wow, how clean must this be, you know. And again, and then I really polished it. Prabhupada's cook then was one Mataji Palika. Mataji, she had been married to Bhavananda. She was a very extraordinary, advanced American Mataji. Dressed in white with a shaved head like that, because her husband had taken sannyas. And she would make neem leaf pakoras for Prabhupada. So there was this big neem tree, very old neem tree, just outside the brahmachari apartment. And I would be sent to climb this tree right to the top and get the tender neem leaves for Prabhupada's pakoras. So I was very lucky. One evening after we were cleaning up after the evening darshan, Achyutananda came, Achyutananda Swami, and he was just like a demigod, but he was very fat, he was like a ball, and he had been preaching down in South India with Guru Kripa and Yashodananda, very successful preaching. They were defeated many Mayavadis down there. They were into the mood of like challenging all these Mayavadi sampradayas down in South India, and they became quite famous. So anyway, Prabhupada, he offered his dandavat, and then he was offering all these prayers in Sanskrit. He had joined in 1967, and then in 1969 or so, when Prabhupada went to San Francisco, he went to India, and he stayed in India since then, right up to when I was then 76. And for the first few years, he was staying in the Gaudiya Math, and he learned everything very quickly. So he was a very advanced devotee. In those days, he was like the number one Prabhupada disciple, sannyasi disciple. His kirtans were out of this world, you know, real Bangla style kirtans. And his classes were just, he was a genius. And he was like a natural comedian. He is so entertaining. I became one of his brahmachari servants. I was just so, you know, impressed by this personality. But anyway, after he had offered prayers to Prabhupada, Prabhupada wasn't pleased. And Prabhupada just directly told him, he says, "Why are you so fat?" And Chuchananda was like completely embarrassed. He didn't know what to say. And then he tried to say, well, this Ayurveda, that the Masikna. Prabhupada didn't want to hear any excuse. He said, a sannyasi should not be so fat. And that really impressed me also. Actually, when, you know, in Vrindavan every day, well, at the time of my initiation, first initiation, we would wait for Prabhupada to call us in for the evening darshan around 5 o'clock. And one day, a few of Srila Prabhupada's sannyasi godbrothers came to visit him. So I had just learned that, you know, as soon as you see a sannyasi, you should offer obeisances. So I did that with a few others, but there were maybe, you know, 30, 50 devotees. A lot of them were sitting in the armchairs in the entrance of the guest house. But only a few of us offered these sannyasis obeisances. So they spent some time with Prabhupada. And then we were called in for the darshan. And Prabhupada immediately started shouting at us. He said, when you see one of my godbrothers, especially the sannyasis, then he shouted, Dandavat! Like this. So they had complained to Prabhupada, how are you training your disciples? A sannyasi godbrother comes in and they're not even acknowledging or respecting. But Prabhupada was very angry. Actually, Lord Chaitanya explains that one shouldn't differentiate between one's shiksha guru or one's diksha guru, because the Diksha Guru represents Madan Mohan and the Shiksha Guru represents Govinda Dev. So if one wants to actually remain in the fold of the divine grace of Lord Krishna, you should be careful about the etiquette. Krishna himself in Krishna book we see during the Rajasuya Yag, or even when he met his cousins, the Pandavas, the first time, he offered obeisances, just like we do, to, it mentions in the Bhagavatam, pranata, means obeisances, to Bhima and Yudhishthira. And because Arjun was the same age as him, then he embraced Arjuna, and he accepted obeisances from Sahadeva and Naraka. The younger brother. So anyway, that was a good lesson. So some days I got a chance to go on morning walk. I remember one morning walk. This was a few months later, actually. When Srila Prabhupada started becoming ill. And maybe I'm jumping ahead. Let me first of all see. Yeah. So in July of that year, one of the popular gurus with the hippies was this young 16-year-old Guru Maharajji. And he had this secretary who was this hippie girl who seduced him. So then her ex-boyfriend beat up Guru Maharajji and he ended up in hospital. So then he left America, and when he entered India, he got arrested with all this undeclared foreign currency and jewelry. They were very strict in those days in India. But anyway, he was one of these bogus gurus who was saying he was Bhagawan. So the headlines, I remember in India, in the Times of India, you know, Bhagawan arrested, beat up, this and that. So anyway, they told Prabhupada that, you know, maybe you should have bodyguards. So I heard that, I wasn't there personally, but anyway, I'd heard that Prabhupada had first quoted Krishna Raksha Koi Mara, Krishna Mara Koi Raksha. Prabhupada was totally confident of the Lord's protection of his devotees. Prati jani hitav Arjuna name bhakta pranashiti. I declare it boldly, O Arjuna, my devotee never perishes. But then they said, well, these hippies, you know, they take drugs and they're crazy like that. So then Prabhupada agreed. So me and Akshaya, another big strong English boy, we were chosen by Gopal Krishna, who wasn't yet a Swami, he was a Grihasthi then, who was a GBC of India. And we were sent beginning of August in 1976 to Hyderabad, where we took up this bodyguard service. So every day, being a new devotee, one of the youngest amongst my godbrothers in terms of initiation and in terms of years, I was only 20 at that time, 1976. I was given the midnight shift, means midnight till, you know, we would do shifts like that, 6 hour shifts, 8 hour shifts, three shifts. And so every night I would have a shift, and then in the day also, actually, we did 2 8-hour shifts and then 2 4-hour shifts during the day. So I was there every night in the higher, newly ISKCON built Hyderabad temple at the Naimpalli railway station road, right next to the railway station in the central Hyderabad. Very good location. And Prabhupada's quarters overlooked this very big temple room, very high. So Prabhupada had a little balcony from his darshan room that looked into the temple. And there was his darshan room, and then there was his sleeping room. But because it was, you know, part of the main temple room, there wasn't any attached bathroom. So then there were some stairs, and then opposite the stairs, kind of jutting out from the building, were the bathrooms. And then on the other side of the stairs from Prabhupada quarters was the president's room, which was Mahamsa Swami. So Prabhupada's entourage were all sleeping in Mahamsa's room. There was Harikesh, there was Harisori, a couple of others, Pradyumna, probably was Prabhupada's Sanskrit translator. So every night I would, they gave a chair for the guards. They gave us these lattis that the police use with lead inside the one end, real lethal weapon. And we would sit outside Prabhupada's door next to the stairs like that, and, you know, we would not let anyone come in like that unless they were authorized. And I would sit there every night. I would get there around 11, 11:30 and sit, you know, until the morning. If Prabhupada would go on his morning walk. And when Prabhupada went on to his morning walk, then I would help the other devotees clean Prabhupada's quarters and bedroom, make his bed, and then clean the bathroom. He was using Mahamsa's, the sannyasi's bathroom. And it was an amazing experience to sit outside Prabhupada's door every night and just chant japa all night long. And, you know, after some time when I read or heard that Prabhupada mentioned that his ecstasies were his purpose, then I understood, because sometimes, you know, during those early hours, the atmosphere would become very special. You know how normally the crickets chirp and make a racket, and all of a sudden you'd get these like pregnant silences. And I could really feel, you know, Prabhupada's like directly in communication with Krishna in his heart. One day this Marwari gentleman came with his family, very aristocratic Marwari family. And this one gentleman, he gave his son to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was very pleased. And he had us engage him in service in the entourage. He wanted this boy kept near him because it was very like aristocratic Brahmin boy. So somehow or other they gave him the idea of he could be one of the bodyguards. So he got the first shift, the evening shift. And Prabhupada's schedule when I was with him, he would like have evening darshan, and that could go on till about 8:30, then he would let the devotees go. But then like Mahamsa Swami and some of the senior disciples would stay on. Prabhupada would take rest around between 10:30 and then midnight, 12:30, half past midnight. Sometimes even as late as 11:30. He wasn't sleeping well, he wasn't digesting. From I took the service, Prabhupada started having difficulty digesting. His liver wasn't functioning. And so this boy, like that, his first shift, his first day, you know, I had kind of an intuition that better go early. So I went at around 11 or so, 11:30 it could have been, and Prabhupada was standing there, very angry. And then he said, call the others. He had a bell that rang in Mahamsa's room. He said, call the others. So I went to Mahamsa's door, was locked, and then the window was closed, but one window was just slightly open, so I managed to push up the handle and push, and I was shouting, and I felt Prabhupada held me by the elbow, moved me aside, then he looked in. And Harisori was very close to Prabhupada, he intuitively. So Prabhupada said, call everyone. So then they all got up quickly and we went into Prabhupada's room. And then Prabhupada just started laying into us, chastising. And he started about the bell. No, he started with the boy. He said, this boy, you know, when I woke up to go to the bathroom, he had taken another chair and he had slept like that on two chairs. So Prabhupada tapped him with his cane to let Prabhupada pass. And the boy just panicked and bolted, ran all the way back home. And Prabhupada said, now he will never come back. Why you do like this? And then he started it about the chokidar, ringing the bell. Prabhupada wanted our ISKCON temples to ring the times like the Big Ben in London. You know, 1 for 1 o'clock, 2 for 2 o'clock, you know, 3, like at every hour ring so many times. And Prabhupada was translating, so Prabhupada was saying, you know, I'm watching, he's never ringing on time. This management, and he went on about management. And we were all just like white-faced getting this anger of this very powerful personality. And then all of a sudden Srila Prabhupada told a joke, and then, you know, everyone very loudly, like nervous reaction, because I was thinking, you know, I was standing there at the back with all these senior devotees sitting down in front of Prabhupada, and I was thinking, you know, sadhu Prabhupada, he's a sadhu, but why is he so angry? Sadhu doesn't get angry. And then Prabhupada told the joke, And immediately I could see he was just trying to discipline us. He wasn't actually angry. And then later on, I remember in one class where he mentions how Bhaktisiddhanta once, when he went to visit Bhaktisiddhanta, there was a snake. Bhaktisiddhanta came out in his balcony. He said, "Kill it," was a cobra. And Prabhupada had some doubt like that. But then he explained how. He quotes one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam that sadhus are never afraid to kill envious living entities like snakes and scorpions. In the same way, those who are envious human beings can be harshly dealt with, something like that. Another occasion I was, we all thought Prabhupada had gone on his morning walk. He would go to the park, in the Hyderabad park, for his morning walk. So we cleaned Prabhupada's rooms and quarters, and then we moved into the bathroom area, and we noticed someone was using Prabhupada's toilet. So one godbrother, his name was Vamshivadana, he thought, some rascal's using Prabhupada's bathroom. So there was two latches, one on the outside, one on the inside. So he tried to push, with someone in there. So he put the latch on the outside. And I'm cleaning the sinks, and then we hear Prabhupada's cane banging on the door. Bang, 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 bang. And then Vangshi, he was cleaning the showers and the toilet areas. And he realized, that must be Prabhupada. And he opened the door, and Prabhupada's standing there in his gumption. "Who's the rascal who locked me in?" "I'm sorry, Prabhupada, I thought it was someone else." Prabhupada just went in. I was on one of those morning walks, actually the only one that I assisted in Hyderabad. And those are most of the only photos you'll see of me with Prabhupada. But anyway, there was this two godbrothers who were co-presidents of Madras, ISKCON Madras, Bhava Bhuti and Shravanananda, friends from America, young brahmacharis. So Bhava Bhuti, he had been a few years already in India. And he, on that morning walk, he started asking Srila Prabhupada, what should one do? When we read your books, we understand that the best is to take sannyas directly from brahmachari. But he said, "I can't help myself, look at the girls during Aartik even." I could see Prabhupada's face was like, not to please that. So he said, "What should we do? Should we still take sannyas even though a tendency is there?" He was saying, "Prabala Indriya, the senses are so strong. Or should we, first get married and saturate this desire and then take sannyas?" So then Prabhupada stopped. And he said, "In the heavenly planets, the goddesses and the heavenly damsels," he said, "when they walk, the wind becomes perfumed by blowing by their body. When they bathe in water, the entire river becomes perfumed." Prabhupada said, "If you take sannyas directly from brahmachari, even though you may have this desire, then you will be awarded a heavenly body like that and these heavenly damsels." And Prabhupada opened his eyes and he said, "Then you can really enjoy." And then he carried on a bit. And then he stopped again and he said, "Most of my disciples will become demigods." And we were talking about that afterwards. And how that discussion came up was one devotee had asked about Vishnujan, because during that 1976 festival, Vishnujan, actually the devotees, they hired this 747 Boeing and flew from Los Angeles, picked up more devotees in New York, and then it stopped in London and picked up all the European devotees. 365 devotees, Air India full. And it was the first time an Air India 747, it landed in Mumbai. In those days they didn't do long, it refuel quite often. And then it was the first time that a 747 landed in Calcutta Airport. So anyway, I was sent as one of the new brahmacharis to accompany the devotees from the airport in Mumbai to the Mumbai temple for a night. And then the next day they flew on to Mayapur, I think by a different plane. But anyway, I remember seeing Vishnu Jahan, you know. And then at Mangalati, he was like jumping 9 foot in the air during the Guru Vashtaka. He's just such an enthusiastic devotee. I was really impressed. So effulgent. Him and Satsvarup, they really impressed me by their effulgence. Satsvarup is Dhira, very sober devotee. So anyway, at that Mayapur festival, he asked Srila Prabhupada on a morning walk whether someone who was having difficulty should, as a sannyasi, and feeling attracted again to, you know, opposite gender, whether he should follow Chota Haridas's example in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Prabhupada just emphatically said, yes. And Vishnu Jahan just went to the back and disappeared, left all his baggage. I mean, he only had a small bag, danda, his passport, everything. And they say he went and jumped into the Ganga. Just followed Chota Haridas's example of suicide. So in that Hyderabad morning walk, one devotee asked about him. And I saw Prabhupada's expression became very sad for a moment. And then he kind of went deep inside. And then he told us that he is continuing his devotional service on a higher planetary level. Prabhupada said like that. That's when Baba Bhuti asked that question about what to do. Because we were quite shocked, you know. Such a strict instruction Prabhupada gave. But actually, when Vishnu Jahan had fallen back, then Prabhupada had continued. But we, you know, are not so strict. Prabhupada had said something like that. And that we should continue the opportunity, very rare opportunity we're having of being engaged in devotional service. So then when Srila Prabhupada was getting more and more ill, one day this one of the very close disciples, another Marwari young man of Rajneesh, he came for darshan one day. And so Prabhupada, during that evening darshan, was talking about trying different hill stations for getting his health back. So this gentleman's family had this bungalow up in this one hill station between Hyderabad and Mumbai. I forget the name now. So we took the train, and as part of Prabhupada's entourage, we were back in second class. Prabhupada had a first class compartment, sleeper. But Prabhupada stopped halfway to Mumbai. And then he got off and he went into this hill station. And one of the other bodyguards was Godrum, another big American brahmachari. And Harisori was down with either, you know, malaria or typhoid or something. Forget what sickness, but he was completely bedridden while we were still in Hyderabad. So Godrum, because he was so strong, he was chosen to massage Prabhupada in place of Harisori. And we were, you know, in the same brahmachari ashram together. I remember one day, after the first day he was doing this massage, he came back and he told me, you know, boy, I can't do this service. He said, Prabhupada, read your mind. He said, you know, Prabhupada had him, Prabhupada was sitting, had him massage his back, and then had him sit in front of Prabhupada and massage his front. He said, but Prabhupada had like small breasts. So when he was massaging Prabhupada's chest, and Prabhupada was having him press harder and harder as he could, he started thinking of women's breasts. And Prabhupada immediately said, Prabhupada just came out and said, the alluring energy takes the form of a woman's breast. And in this way she ensnares a man. And Gojum was completely blown away. Prabhupada read my mind, you know. But he was lucky. Anyway, he went up to continue the massage in the hill station. And I carried on with the rest of the party to Mumbai. And there was this, you know, these Marwari people's car there, Lux Deluxe, one of imported car. They drove Prabhupada up, and it was winding so much, Prabhupada got even sicker. Gudrun was telling me when they all reached Bombay. And then Marwari style, they had this big, you know, family lunch. And all the subjis were in the middle, very opulent. And everyone was helping themselves. And Srila Prabhupada, Harikesh, at one moment, he picked out this onion round from one subject. Prabhupada, there's onions in this subject. Prabhupada also picked one up. He says, no, this is not an onion. He popped it in his mouth and chewed it. Just perfect host. So then the Marwaris were saying, oh, you don't eat onions? And then Prabhupada told the story that at the change of the age, says in the Puranas, it recounts how when Dwapara Yuga became Kali Yuga, they lost the power, Brahminical power of chanting mantras. And instead of rejuvenating the cow would be burned to death. So one young Brahmin boy, he was smelling this burning cow, and it smelled so appetizing. And then he was thinking of this verse, Yagna Shishtashina Santo Muchyante Sarva Kilbishaya. So he thought, let me keep some of this Mahaprasad, Yagna Prasad. So he hid one leg of this cow in some bushes. And then when he came back later, when no one else was there, one divine voice in the sky said, don't fall down by eating cow flesh from your Brahminical status. If you want to get this taste, then use these two plants. And from the cow's leg, an onion plant had grown, and from his hooves, a garlic plant. The Prabhupada told that story there. Anyway, then Prabhupada back in Mumbai. What's the time? I'm actually only about a third of the way. What should I do? Carry on? Anyway, let me jump ahead a bit to this Prabhupada's disappearance quickly. Yeah, during the 1977 festival, they arranged another Cross Maidan Pandal program. And by that time, Prabhupada was so ill that we would have to carry him in a chair palanquin. And I was one of them. That you see me in the movies, carrying Prabhupada during the last days in Mumbai. But we would, you know, take Prabhupada down to this Pandal program where there was like 40, 50,000 people in this huge Pandal, Cross Maidan, downtown Bombay. And, you know, Prabhupada, when he would get out of the car, we'd lift him into his chair. He couldn't even hold his head up, he was so weak. But then as soon as you'd go in the Vyasasan, he would become like a lion guru. And he just gives, you can listen to those recordings, it's amazing talks. And then again, when you would take him out, he was just totally exhausted. But I had a lot of very amazing mercy pastimes at that place. Sign that I should stop. So anyway, Srila Srila Prabhupada's departure day, I was actually there for the last 2 weeks. Yeah, I knew. I was still doing my, you know, with Vijayda also, we were still working for the construction in Bombay. And Prabhupada really wanted to open Radharas Bihari's new temple. So we had a, you know, 3 8-hour shift of the marble workers. The BBT gave this huge loan so we could just pay and make all the marble work in time before Prabhupada left. So I was spending the last 2 weeks there, but then that was, you know, huge. Very, anyway, I could recount many incidences there, but we don't really have time, maybe some other day. But one thing I'd like to say, you know, is two things actually. Prabhupada had this dream of this Ramanuja Tilak wearing Brahmin, Kaviraj, that he could help Prabhupada. So the devotees searched all India and they found this very famous Ramanuja Tilak, famous Kaviraj in Kolkata. So he agreed, they paid his airfare, he came and he treated Prabhupada. And then he would go to the Himalayas and pick his own medicines for Prabhupada, come back. And he was treating Prabhupada during the last few weeks like that. And I remember how in the last days he was saying how he had treated thousands of people leaving their bodies, you know, and many cases like Prabhupada's case where the liver stops functioning, digestion doesn't work anymore, and then it just becomes skin and bones. I remember when Prabhupada came back to Mumbai from the 1977 festival, you know, we still hadn't prepared his fifth floor apartment, so he was still staying in his old quarters. But when we took him from the airport, and then the Gagamuni gave these ambassadors specially made for Prabhupada, very beautiful silver lotuses on the doors, and very luxury model of ambassador. But it took him to old quarters. Prabhupada wouldn't get out. He wanted to go to his new quarters. And, you know, that was full of workers. We also had a 3 8-hour shift of workers to try and get it ready for Prabhupada. So then we carried, even the lift wasn't working. Me and Vijayda carried Prabhupada up the 5 stories. You know, all just concrete. No, just a huge construction site. A lot of noise, you know. But Prabhupada loved his quarters. But then wasn't ready, so he went and stayed for 2 weeks down at Mr. Mahadevia's. And we had like a schedule, you know, of the different works, and it was like 2 months' work. And somehow or other, by Prabhupada's potency, we finished that in 2 weeks. And when Prabhupada came, you know, the last workers were just like finishing off. It still smelled of varnish and everything. But Prabhupada loved those quarters. And so Prabhupada was sitting there, you know, just come from the airport getting his massage before his bath. And me and Vijayta, we had just carried in Prabhupada's bed and his mosquito net. So while he was getting massage, we were putting up his mosquito net bamboos, cross bamboo like that. And then Prabhupada, they were trying to, you know, force Prabhupada to, Tamal was there. He had to taken over from Harikesh. Oh, that's another whole leela. Anyway, I won't get into that. How Prabhupada knocked Harikesh over with his chapati. Told him, you're a jack of all trades and a master of none. He said, even a 6-year-old girl can make a better chapati than this in India. So Tamal came over and Prabhupada sent him off. And Harikesh wouldn't go. Prabhupada said, well, Shani, you go. Because Hansa Duda had got big trouble in Germany. So Prabhupada sent him there to be GBC. So anyway, Tamal was trying to, and you know, enforce Prabhupada to try and encourage him, rather. And they were trying to tell Prabhupada to drink this Complan, this baby formula. It was But Prabhupada, he, I remember distinctly, he said, all my life, he said, from the early life, I managed to conquer sleep, but I could never conquer my tongue. He said, now by Krishna's mercy, I have no more desire. So Prabhupada just like very forcefully said, so just leave me be, you know. But he became very thin. So this Kaviraj said, you know, when they don't eat like this, it's just skin and bones. And there's no muscle or fat to cushion the nerve from being pressed directly against the bone. And he said, these people are in so much agony, I have to administer morphine. He said, your Guru Maharaj is never in any pain. He says, I understand he is a Paramahamsa. Like that. And then he predicted the day and the hour. The morning he took Prabhupada's pulse, he said, today, this evening. And that was a very moving departure, very Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada's last breath was Hare Krishna, and then he left. But softly. No, actually Prabhupada continued translating right till the end. Only the dictaphone could hear him. He was speaking so softly, he was so weak. But you read those purports up to the 14th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. It's just crystal clear. Very powerful purports. So anyway, when Prabhupada left, what happened was I got a telegram from Saurabh, who was in charge of the construction, that I had to come down to Bombay. I'd kind of been delaying. I realized Prabhupada would leave, so I was kind of neglecting my service. So on the Sunday night, I took this express train down to Bombay. I forget the name of the train. And I arrived there around 5 Monday afternoon, the day Prabhupada left. So I wasn't there for the actual departure. And then that night, you know, in the Brahmachari ashram, Siddhartha Prabhu, now he's a sannyasi, Brahmachari, he was this hairdresser who became a devotee in Mumbai. So he woke me up, he said, Prabhupada is here. So just instinctively, you know, from my sleeping bag, immediately offered obeisances. Then I said, Prabhupada, sleep in Vrindavan, what you saying? He said, must be a dream. And we slept again. It was 2 a.m. And then the next instant, you know, this big storm came through Bombay. And this huge was like this express cyclone, and it just knocked over this huge, you know, neem tree. Boom! And woke us all up. It was about 2:30 in the morning. And then at Mangalatik we heard Prabhupada had left the evening before. So then we all went to the train station, went to Vrindavan for the Samadhi ceremony. And I remember one devotee brought a newspaper, you know, Times of India, and it had a photo of a tidal wave in Madras with flames on top of the tidal wave. This storm had swept through the whole of India and created this tidal wave, just this flash storm, creating havoc. And then we were thinking, wow, just see how inauspicious it is when the pure devotee departs. Anyway, I'll stop there. Maybe some other day I can continue with the rest. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you.